tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Johnson. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
I feel like I need a broom, and I gotta be sweeping this room as we start up this show today.
Sweep.
Hey everybody, my name's Kyle Maddock. I'm gonna be your host for this Game of Thrones after show today, and I am joined by my three lovely co-hosts today. Way across the table I have the always lovely Autumn Chiklis.
Hello everybody, welcome back.
Yeah. The dashing Ryan Mallett.
Valar Morghulis, everybody. I'm Ryan Mallett. Nice to see you.
Nice. And the killer, Kristen Snyder, right
hey
next
guys,
to me.
Hey, guys. What's up? Happy to be here, as always.
You bring that knife every time. I think you've earned the name killer.
Thank you. I'll take it.
Yeah. It's your needle.
So let's jump right into it, guys. Let's start with Arya, the person. Oh, we've got some Dornish red
some
today.
Dornish pink.
Oh, some Dornish pink. Excuse me, not quite red.
We're playing the drinking Game of Thrones.
It's the drinking Game of Thrones. All men must drink.
All men must drink.
Obviously, non-alcoholic. Yes.
Well, drinking. That starts us off pretty good today, because we have a scene with Arya's training montage here, where Jaqen H'ghar is giving people drinks, and they're dying. And this is, like, part of this house of black and white thing that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like the fraternity of mysterious men.
I thought the same thing, speaking of drinking. The first thing I actually thought was, wow, this is the worst hazing ever. Wow, what a terrible way to haze people. Just make them... I guess it's not too far off.
It's not too far off. Drink until you die, and then...
Drink until you die.
I mean, I considered this a step in the process. I mean, she keeps asking, what's next? What do we do after we wash them? I mean, I think this is what becomes of the people who want to be transformed into no one. I think maybe you have to die. It seems that way to me.
Do you think that guy that asked for the drink or spoke to Jaqen, and I guess he didn't really ask for it, but he wanted it, do you think he was training to be a faceless man, too?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he could have just...
like his training was over at that point.
No, here's the thing. I don't know. I mean, we're walking into this scene in the middle of it. We can only guess what happened before. Maybe he was sick. Maybe Jaqen H'ghar is helping him. Or maybe he is transitioning to no one. We don't know. We're in the middle of a scene and we have no background.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, my initial instinct was my initial instinct is, oh, obviously these are all kind of the trainees, and Arya, being who she is going to want to get into it right away, which of course she did. But she has to, she's being very impatient and needs to go through the steps. And it's so interesting that she's so short-sighted regarding this. It makes sense considering her feisty nature.
Yep.
But it seems obvious that this is a job. To become no one is to be very, very patient.
In the eyes of the many-faced God, you must become no one.
You must be, exactly.
And we were introduced to this the many-faced God.
And
there's only one God, child, and she knows the God is death.
Yes.
Right. Death is the one true God.
Which is a very similar parallel to her talk with Cyril Farrell back in season one, where it was kind of like, not death. What do we say to death? Not today.
Not today.
Well,
bringing that in, obviously, and we'll get to this later with Needle, but when I thought about that quote when she was going to toss Needle into... the water, and then she didn't. So I was thinking of, oh, what do you say to death? What do you say to death? Not today. And thinking about how she's probably gone, because I thought, obviously, you're going to have to die to become...
Needle's a I care more about Needle getting tossed away than I do half the characters at this point.
I
feel like Needle was like Wilson in Castaway.
Oh, yes.
Needle, no!
I wrote "no" in all caps in my notes.
But not she didn't let Needle go, which we were discussing while we were watching it. This is either going to be a wonderful thing for her down the road, and it's going to save her butt, or it's going to be her downfall. That she's going through this training where she has to strip herself,
renounce her possessions,
just everything, and she has to become no one. She can't be Arya Stark anymore. She has to be no one. So she has to get rid of all these material possessions. Mm-hmm. But she keeps that sword, maybe not on her person, but she keeps it hidden.
She still has it.
Yes,
she has it somewhere.
So no matter how far she goes in her training, she left that breadcrumb that could lead to some trouble down the road.
Yeah, that's the thing. It could come back to save her, or come back to haunt her.
It's going
to
be one of the two.
Well, I think she has to throw it away before she herself can become no one. Because I was thinking about how refreshing it might be if I were in that situation and I had to dump everything that means something to me off into the ocean. And I actually kind of liked what I felt right there. Like, yeah, it's sad, you know, that anything, like, her father gave it to her, right?
John gave it to her.
Okay, so, like, that sort of represents anything of her family that's left. So throwing that away, I mean, that's a huge step, but at the same time, she needs to do it in order to move on in the progress of becoming no one.
She does, but she didn't.
I know, but she will.
Maybe.
She will.
Maybe.
Here's the difficult thing from her perspective, though, obviously. Not only is the sentimental value so great because it is pretty much the last relic she has of her family and her previous life. And he has that wonderful speech about how is it that nobody has been surrounded by Arya Stark's things. But it's also her one way of protection right now. The way she has been able to survive is by being able to be a kick-ass fighter and kind of feisty and scrappy. So giving away her needle, if you will.
That's the one time I've seen her be afraid of anything. She's afraid to let go of her true past, which is, I mean, Needle I don't think represents just a sword that she really likes. I mean, it's the one thing that her brother, Jon Snow, gave to her. And it's the one reminder of the past, and it's gotten her through all these challenges, and the love for her family is still in the back of her head. She's not ready to let go of it.
Yeah, and it's her protection as well. Like, there is an element of she's in a foreign place with nobody around, and the one thing that she knows can keep her safe, to relinquish that is very difficult.
Now, I asked some of the people, and if you guys are watching, go ahead and join in the conversation. I asked, who is the many-faced god? People are saying that the many-faced god is all gods.
Yeah.
Gods equal death.
Well, they did. They mentioned several different gods in there. They mentioned one of the people from the Seven. And are you wanting to give me some wine? Please do, sir. Please. I love it. So they mentioned one of the gods from the Seven, from the faith. They also mentioned the drowned god, which is the Ironborn. Theon and his people, the drowned god. And then she mentioned the Weirwood tree, which is the people of the north. And so there are all these statues of different gods from around the realm in this one place, sort of this melding.
And she's going through the initiation process.
Like the inside of a tomb. Like, one of the first things I thought, other than the fraternity, is that it looked like the inside of a tomb with all of the with the stone and the fire for some reason. Or it's less the fire, but the feeling surrounding it. It almost looks like one of the tombs in ancient Egypt that you would, or at least that I saw a lot in my textbooks. I need to go there one day, but it absolutely looks like the inside of where you put dead people,
or where you die.
Nice.
I don't know, but I think death is a great teacher. I mean, when anyone close to us dies or passes away, it often causes a time of reflection.
Very
and
true.
I mean, even in this episode later on, we see Jonas sort of, you know, becoming himself in that moment or admitting his faults and being aware of life. I think that, you know, death is a great teacher, and I'm excited to see the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Where do you guys think the bodies go after they wash them?
To Qwyburn.
To Qwyburn. They ship them off to King's Landing.
Is that girl blind? She seemed blind.
There were a few moments where she looked like she was just kind of wandering, like when she came into the room.
I just thought she was like...
avoiding eye contact, like catty girls do.
Yeah.
That's how when I'm upset with someone...
Ryan, don't look at me.
I'm upset with you, because I'll just be like, flog. That was brutal. Ouch. And it was the first time in a while I saw Arya break. You know what I mean? Or not break, but she was... Like there's something almost desperate in her in a way that normally she gets angry, but she was both angry and kind of freaked out by this woman.
I think it's important though that she's getting hit and hurt like this. I think a lot of people need to be drowned in like a world of suffering in order to realize order the to truth learn. Of things.
And that's what Pod said later on to Brienne. He said, if you didn't snap at me, I wouldn't learn anything.
That's very true. What is it? Spare the rod, spoil the child?
Spare the pod.
Spare the pod. So, yeah, we've got Arya, and we've got her thing, and we're going to see where this all goes. But let's head over to King's Landing now, where there is a wedding.
Yes! Da-da-da!
Tom and Bell.
Can I just say I'm glad that this wasn't, like, a huge deal, the wedding?
Yeah.
Like, we didn't get, like, the prep, and nobody really talked about it beforehand, and I was so happy about that.
It wasn't a red wedding. It wasn't a purple wedding.
I think a big thing about that was, Joffrey's wedding was so big, and he died. So let's keep this one small. Let's do this one. And Marjorie's, third wedding?
Let's skip to the sex.
Oh, man, yes. Tommen must have been getting lessons from Pod or something. I don't know.
I want to do this all day, every day, for the rest of my life.
He speaks for all men.
He speaks for all men.
And women.
Cheers.
Cheers. to consummate it.
This really creeped me out because in the books, Tommen is still this goofy little kid who plays with his kittens and everything.
He totally still is, though.
Wasn't ready for that.
What did I say when we were watching? I said something like, oh my god, he's so silly, because he, like, even when he was married, he's just sitting up there with his goofy grin like, I just got married.
So much has been thrust upon him in such a short amount of time.
And now he is thrusting upon her.
There we go.
Touche.
But Marjorie is throwing a lot of words at him, like, sugar-coated. And like, what she...
She's the master manipulator
here.
She's fantastic at it. I mean, she knows she has Tommen wrapped around her finger, and she is just working it.
But she's wrapped around his.
Yeah.
I'm not touching that.
Well, there's created this, like, Cersei-Marjorie versus,
each other. The of the kingdoms.
That was an awesome scene. Yeah. I loved that. It was just so vicious. It was so cordial and so catty at the same time.
It was so polite, but you knew they were just digging into each other every line.
You can kind of see Cersei losing her power a bit. She used to be in control of all these arguments back in the first season with Littlefinger and before with Margaery and all this. And now she sort of realized she couldn't get those jabs in this one. It was very... She went there. I think she thought she was going to get the upper hand, and then she didn't. And it's a realization coming.
Right. She doesn't have a lot of ammunition left. I mean, her son's king, but her father is dead.
Yep.
You know, her brother's gone.
Oh, we kind of glazed over what starts the cat fight, and it's Cersei when he's talking about Casterly Rock, basically going, "Oh, wouldn't you be happy? I want you to be happy. Why don't you go?"
Marjorie's planting the seed to turn Tommen against his mother.
Obviously.
And on her side.
By pulling, of all things, the mom's going to be overprotective of your car.
Mom's not going to... Mom's going to be around, and don't you want to have a lot of sex?
why would
you want mom around?
We can't do that with mom around, although Marjorie brings it up when Queen Mom is there.
Exhausting.
Which is a little awkward.
A little awkward.
It's just disrespectful, and she's calling attention to the fact that she can now be disrespectful to Cersei.
Oh, she takes so many jabs between the drinking comment. Like, it's a little early for us, but...
Sorry, we don't have wine for you.
But between that and the age, like, oh, what? I thought, I don't know if you guys consider this a jab, but the queen, mother queen kind of comment was very much
grandmother queen.
Yeah, it's almost a reminder of you no longer, I'm the queen now. Mm-hmm. You are another title.
Yeah.
They're more hostile than, I think it's one of the more hostile wars that we've seen.
It's good.
Tommen is a puppet, and both these ladies have their hand up his ass.
Yeah,
right,
but
yanking the string.
I'm liking Tommen. I kind of want to see him be king now. I feel like him and Marjorie would make a good duo.
Yeah, I mean, if it's him that's ruling. I mean, right now it's either going to be
he's
it's
not
Marjorie.
Ruling though. Cersei's sitting on the council in his place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she's trying to hold on to as much power as possible, and he's just not ready to be king.
Hmm.
Yeah, he is a puppet. So,
yep. Then we move on to the High Septon and his little role-playing game here in King's Landing. Whoa. He's not quite a pure man, that High Septon there.
That's kind of hot.
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to say anything, but...
The maiden, always the maiden.
Yeah, but we get this, the sparrows barge in, and they make him do this walk of shame, which is sort of their punishment for sinners of the church, I suppose.
Yeah, what a bummer. Yeah. That was a really kind of... That sucks.
Yeah, I wanted to play out a little more.
By the way, I was kind of expecting it to. I'm happy that it didn't get gratuitous, actually, and then they got kind of to the point.
Yeah.
Which is, I just love the turnaround between the High Sparrow and Cersei, and we'll obviously get to that in a minute, mm-hmm. but when she goes to talk to him, I knew kind of immediately, though, like, she's not, from her vibe, she's not arresting him.
She's not interested in religion. She's interested in power. And as she said, faith and the crown are the two pillars that hold up the world. And right now, the High Septon's causing all this discord within the Red Keep and within the kingdom. So get rid of him. Let's talk to this High Sparrow and see if we can't get him on my side, get him in my pocket.
Hmm. And I think when she goes to talk to him, I think she sees him as this weaker individual, whereas the High Septon is sort of kind of got used to his power and he's doing his own thing sort of now, and she sees the High Sparrow as this weak, shoeless guy that she can most likely control down the line. And I think that's why she backs him.
Well, what was so interesting to me, and I was kind of hesitating to say this before because I didn't know how much we wanted to cover of the High Septon himself.
Bring it on.
But the High Sparrow, I mean, he was basically Gandhi when he's talking about, like, giving his shoes away and this is what they all do. And I don't know about you guys, but the vibe I get is that he's an inherently good man, one of the few we have, or at least right now. And he's one of the few people in this kind of realm that are devoutly religious for the right reasons, or it appears that way. So it's interesting to me that Cersei would become involved with someone who is so good and noble, or appears that way, because it's much more difficult to manipulate people in the way that Cersei always does when they are honorable. Does that make sense?
I mean, he kind of reminded me of no one. I mean, the House of No One and Arya's storyline, because he was talking about how when people ask me who I am, I say I'm no one special. And so, I mean, I don't like looking at him as someone who's weak, because he's very strong-minded. I mean, someone who can do those things is, like, very aware.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that he's remarkably... I think that he isn't weak at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he is very in touch with his morals, mm-hmm. and probably will stick to them.
The High Septon we're talking about.
No, I'm talking about...
I'm sorry.
Sparrow.
The Sparrow. The
yes.
High Sparrow.
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know,
they're
very close. They're very
high
close.
High Septon is... No, I'm talking about High Sparrow. He seems very... He doesn't seem weak to me at all. He seems very morally
cool.
Grounded.
Now, but the guy who busted in and, you know, caused all that ruckus in Baelish's brothel right, was Lancel.
Yes.
Right? Lancel Lannister.
Yes, absolutely.
Who's become this cult follower. He's the one who makes it seem, the sparrows seem like a dangerous thing.
Mm.
Lancel, he seems more like a radical.
Yeah.
And he almost seemed like the leader. And then we're brought to the High Sparrow, who seems like, seems like a pretty just
man. I mean, all they did was make this guy walk naked, which I think is a great punishment. I mean, it's not like I don't...
I mean, they also beat him.
That's how it starts.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know.
I mean, I don't think that they're vicious people.
I think we can all agree that we enjoyed the nudity.
My only point was with Cersei, he seems like, as the head of it, a very morally founded man. And how is Cersei going to be able to manipulate someone who is so grounded in their principles and their faith?
With morals.
Yes.
And, with temptation.
You manipulate people with what they have.
I mean, it's the scary thing, because the High Septon is very the word of the seven is law, pretty much, to him. And and he's got Lancel in his side, and Lancel knows a few things, which is kind of scary. I mean, he's got him on his side, so we never know. But leaving that, let's go to guy who has no morals whatsoever, Qyburn, down in his dungeon.
Let's do it.
Qyburn, a.k.a. Frankenstein?
Yes, Gregor Stein.
What do you think's under those sheets? We're thinking man-bear-pig?
Man-bear-pig.
it's some body parts from Gregor Clegane.
And a dwarf.
And maybe
stuff.
A dwarf head. And
I'm so excited to lift that sheet up. That's going to be wicked crazy.
Ooh. That's not the first time I've heard that.
That's going to be wicked crazy.
Imagination lies under the sheets.
Awesome. Well, we will find out soon, hopefully, what is under there, because that's going to be awesome. Yes. And Cersei sends a letter off to Peter Baelish,
yes,
which we will get to in a little bit. But let's head north. Let's go up to sort of Winterfell in the north area. Okay. And Ramsay Snow is going to have a new bride.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh,
yes.
Poor Sansa. She's thrown around like a rag doll, isn't she?
She's just married to one sadist after another, isn't she?
Yes. I mean, I'm not really mad about this storyline. I want to see her get her vengeance, and she has to be doing something. I can't imagine her doing anything else right now in the story. So if she's going to marry someone and get vengeance for her family, I'd like to see it happen.
Well, would you rather see her with a Bolton or a Baelish?
A Bolton for now, because I mean, life's very long, and she has time for more husbands.
That is true. Well, I mean, life isn't that long in the Game of Thrones, unfortunately, for most people.
For the women, for the most part.
Oh, yeah, depending. Ooh. But she's finally entered the game, and there was that wonderful moment when she's talking to Lord Bolton where she's looking at him, and she's basically, you can tell that she is just seething because she's looking at the man who killed her brother, and then...
I don't know. I think she was playing off pretty well. I mean, she was really nice.
She's getting better at not trusting people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like when Brienne came to find her, and finally, oh, Brienne, she found her. Take her back. Take her home or whatever. Wherever you're going to take her. And as much as you wanted to see her trust Brienne of Tarth, because she is a trustworthy person, I was actually proud of Sansa for not trusting her.
Yeah.
It's the first smart, you know, you can tell that she's learning. You can't trust anybody.
I like what you said, Autumn, that now she's finally playing the game.
She's finally playing.
Oh, she absolutely is. And I agree with you, where as an audience, from a dramatic standpoint, we have the dramatic irony of knowing that she hates Lord Bolton. And we know that she should trust Brienne. But as a character, as growth is concerned, I think it's a tremendous step forward that... For her own safety, we've always kind of complained, or at least most people I've talked to have complained, that early Sansa was very pathetic and whiny and just kind of tossed around like a rag doll. And now she actually has a spine, and she's playing the game.
Yeah,
she is.
You can see that movement. There was a lot of wonderful, subtle acting in this episode. A lot of moments, read between the line type of acting moments that I found beautiful. And that scene overlooking Moat Cailin, where Littlefinger tells what's going to go on, and he walks away, and Sansa's just broken. And then you see her pick herself back up.
That's
and
what
she
do.
Says, there's no justice in the world, not unless we make it.
Oh.
Or however Littlefinger says it.
However, I wrote that down, too, and my notes are somewhere.
Because you know something's coming. She's not just going to marry Ramsay Bolton, and just that's the end of it. No,
the seed has been planted.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It's really it's an interesting dynamic with Sansa and Arya, where Arya has, like, escaped these rules of the realm and the world and the lordships and everything and is literally becoming no one, whereas Sansa has regained her name, and she's marrying and doing the court and working it that way, and how these two sisters' lives are complete opposites now.
I'm not
really
going to say complete opposite. I think that, you know, she's keeping her name, but she's an Arya underneath all that. I mean, she's beginning that path that Arya has begun already. You know, she is now going to start this murderous revenge story, and I think that's what Arya's doing as well. So I don't consider them to be in total opposite positions mentally.
How interesting is it that Ramsay, of all people, I guess it kind of makes sense, but he promises he won't hurt her.
And no.
I almost believed him for a second.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, oh, he seems so innocent.
on that note, there's some funny comments. Keanu says, Bolton will go 50 Shades of Grey all over Sansa.
Oh, my gosh. I want to see that.
He's got the room.
I do want to see that scene. Yeah.
Oh, he does like flame.
I'm just gonna drink
If you guys want to join the discussion on Twitter, use the hashtag ABTVGOT, and you can join. You can tweet Ryan over here. He's checking
or join the chat on AfterBuzz TV.
There you go. Absolutely,
we're paying attention.
So we get Pod and Brienne spying on Sansa and Littlefinger a little bit here, and we get this heartbreaking story. Oh, Autumn, you want to talk? Take it away.
I've been this tall since I was 11 years old, so I feel for you, Brienne. All the boys were like a foot shorter than me. It was hard.
And did Renly ask you to dance?
No
Renly in your life?
There was a Renly in my life, but not not Renly himself. Mm. But all joking aside, you brought up beautiful acting moments. This was a beautiful little monologue
Gwendolyn
that
Christie?
She had. Yeah, oh my God. Oh my gosh, it was really, really, truly wonderful. I was heartbroken. Mm. And of all of the things that people talk about in this show, murdering and, mm-hmm. you know, raping and killing of people that you love, it was so emotional just for her to talk about the fact that all of the boys were making fun of her. Mm-hmm. And it seems so trite in comparison to everything else that she has gone through, but it was so beautiful to watch her be so vulnerable about being Brienne the Beauty, ironically, mm-hmm. and it was that made her, not maybe that specifically, but that was one of the things that made her pledge her loyalty in that way.
Well, it shows that just the one small act of kindness can go so far. It just goes for miles. You never know how far mm-hmm. the ripples flow.
Exactly.
Well, I like that it was about, her story was about a dance, because in this show we don't get a whole lot of real life activity of people just living those True. Mundane moments that, you know, you're dancing or like actual things that happen in our life. It's always like high stakes in this show. Mm. So it was nice that we were sort of getting this story about something as simple as a dance, which actually, you know, changed her life. Yeah. And now she's on this mission to kill Stannis, and I just feel like all the women have a name in their mind of the guys that they want to kill, and it's great.
It was a beautiful moment. And not only to kill Stannis, but she's on a mission to train Pod, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now
we
get that final connection.
It was so cute. It was just such a... It was so sentimental. I felt so like emotional at the end of it. And like I said, there is so much kind of craziness going on in the show between all of the death and all of the loss and all of the betrayal. It was so remarkably simple in ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think that Stannis will die at the hand of Brienne?
I hope.
Rapid fire.
Do I think so?
No, because no one gets what they want.
Yeah.
In
true.
This world.
As a book reader, I'd say no too. But
I'm gonna say yes, because like she just knocked down the Hound, and this woman's like loyal, and when she has a goal, she meets it. I mean, she didn't protect Catelyn and her family, but look,
the Hound didn't have an army.
Exactly.
Also, I think more to the point, she has to get to him before someone else
That's
kills him first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. All right, yeah. So, Elves in the North, let's see. Littlefinger and Roose Bolton chat a little bit, and we've got this connection where Roose Bolton just needs the name Stark to help him out. But what is Littlefinger getting out of this? He's getting the loyalty of the Boltons on his side? Is that, like, I feel like Littlefinger's getting the shaft here.
I don't think Littlefinger would ever let Littlefinger get the shaft. I think that there's more at play here, though.
Yeah,
there's a big end play here.
Yes.
I mean, he just wants to knock down everybody else, so in the end, it's him and the queen of his choice. I mean, at the end, I think he wants to be on top. I think that's what everybody wants in here. I mean, he wants on the throne, too. That's what I think. I think he just sees the Boltons as another pawn that needs to be removed from, you know, his board of this game that he's playing.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the top, let's go to the top of the world in the Wall. Jon Snow. He refuses. I got little notes here. He refuses Stannis' offer. Ollie's his new steward. And we get this scene where Davos and Jon sort of talk about how maybe Jon should be a little more proactive in protecting the realm. I don't know. Is that going to pan out?
That's the thing. Stannis is clearly wise in command.
Mm-hmm.
He knows
mm-hmm.
how to command men and armies. He's a great leader of many men. But Ser Davos is, what did I say before on the screen?
The onion knight.
He's an onion that's wise beyond his peels. He's just great with individual men. He's wise with one-on-one. He can mm-hmm. really change and sway the hearts of men because he is wise.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that Davos really was being real in that moment and not necessarily speaking the words of what Stannis would want. Because I think we all really want Jon to go and fight those
Kick
battles and get dirty. I mean, I know I do. I want him to leave the Wall, but I understand that, you know, he is honorable like his father, even though that killed his father, and he has to do that right now. But I can't wait for the day when he leaves the Wall.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I know, because when we got to the end of the episode, you cheered. You're like, hells yeah.
Yeah.
But also, this is the first scene, I believe, this season where winter is coming has been uttered.
He did say it.
He said winter is coming. There were a few things that were finally mentioned this season that made me very happy. And it's not, I mean, we all know that winter is coming. It's not that he needed to reiterate it. It was just such a moment of, you know, blah, 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 blah. Winter is coming.
And well, you guys need to leave because we need to feed everybody and winter is coming.
Yeah. Throughout all the magic and everything, you still have those rules where people need to be fed and we can't feed too many mouths.
And people need to obey their commands.
Oh.
They do, yes.
Janos Slint.
Yeah, we get down to the meeting room and a little Janos Slint is not having his new position at Greyguard.
Mm-hmm. The baby cries.
Being a coward finally catches up with him.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yes! Yeah, thank you.
And he can be afraid no more.
This was an interesting thing. Let me tell you a little thing from the books. George released this chapter as an early chapter before the book came out, and John actually took Janos up to the top of the wall, put a noose around his neck, and threw him off the wall. Mm. And then when it actually made it to the published release of the book, he had changed it to getting beheaded and reflecting on his dad.
I was about to say, it has to be a callback to Ned. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, yeah, what is it?
You have to look in the eyes of the person that you're going to kill. Like, episode one, are you talking
about? Whoever passes the sentence must swing the sword.
Absolutely.
And I like how there was almost a moment of weakness, you know, when Janos is begging for his life. I'm sorry.
Mercy.
And, you think, is he gonna let him live? And he doesn't. He swings his sword. And you see Stannis over there, you know, nodding in approval.
Stannis is like, can we burn him now, too? That's what I like to do.
Also, by the way, also kind of a callback to Daenerys.
Yes.
Mm. And her, mercy, mercy, mercy. Nope. Law. And obviously there was a very different reaction with Daenerys.
Well, for her, you can do whatever you want because you got a dragon to back you up.
But if you're a queen, you have to be able to...
Who needs mercy when you have dragons?
You know what's weird about that situation is I did not want her to murder that man, but I did want Jon to kill Jonas Slytherin.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, there's a whole different, there's different circumstances and everything, but both cases boil down to someone broke the law and the person in charge had to pass the sentence.
Yeah.
And they both got beheaded, and I feel like the reaction is going to be very different between the two.
Of course.
Well, yeah, I disagreed with Daenerys' decision to behead that man, but I agreed with Jon's. I think in this world, if you're consistently kind, then you're good, right? If you're consistently cruel, then you get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But if you waver, if you are honorable and then you're not, and then, you switch it up, you switch up your decision-making, then you stumble and then you fall and you die and you lose the game. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're consistent with whatever it is, and Jon Snow has been a consistently honorable leader who does what has to be done, whether it's killing the Half-Hand or killing a man who truly deserved to die, as long as you're consistent, you'll get ahead.
I think some people would argue about his honor because, I mean, he is friends with the Wildlings and he did sleep with one. And there are a lot of people in his ranks that maybe don't think he's the most honorable
person. The Wildlings were just born on the wrong side of the wall.
That was great.
Yeah.
Should do voiceover work for us.
But going off that, I feel like Daenerys, she hasn't yet set those rules that we know she's going to follow. I feel like she's swayed back and forth as a ruler, and she's still trying to find her way, and so we don't know how to predict what she's going to do or how to accept it.
Well, I felt like the beheading on her part, and I'll only touch on this for a second because we need to focus on this, but on her part, and I kind of felt that echoing in this episode, it was her kind of finding her way to a certain extent.
Definitely.
Because regardless of whether or not you agreed with the decision or not, it was her making a choice to obey the law of the land firmly.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether or not that is right or wrong, that is a decision made as a ruler, and I think it's one of the first times she's really kind of on her way in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I think with this episode, with Jon Snow, it was kind of a definitive... He's been given this new position, and this is how he is going to lead. It is kind of like his first major decision in that way.
Nice. I'll just make one more thing, and I think we'll move on. But I'm a little nervous for him because when people in his family, when there are beheadings involved, Robb Stark and the Carr Starks, and Theon and Sir Roger Cassel beheaded people, bad things happened afterwards. So I'm a little nervous for John right now. I'm a little nervous to where that's going to lead. Just a bad omen.
I mean, can I say one more thing? Sir Alistair did stand in front of Jonas Slint for a second before they took him out. So there obviously wasn't a total agreeance with what was about to happen.
Quick little audience correspondence. I asked, what do you think is the best way to die in this world and the worst way to die? And it seems like
anything to do with Melisandre is the worst.
The consensus is burning alive and being flayed are the worst ways to die, which I totally agree with.
That's low on my list of ways I'd like to go.
And the best way to die is during sex or beheading. And some would say they're the same thing.
What about cuddling? What about cuddling?
Cuddling to death? That's
what about getting your slit throat while you're cuddling?
Oh, yeah, that was a thing. Yeah. That was a thing.
So let's move on to Tyrion. Dun, dun, dun. I didn't think we were going to get in this episode, but here we are. Tyrion and Varys in the nicest wagon ever.
Yeah. I love their dynamic.
I'm going to lose my mind.
They're great together, but they get out and they're in Volantis, and they see another Red Priest out there who was a former slave, and that was a pretty interesting dynamic. She saw him.
She recognized him.
Yeah.
There was something going on there.
Something.
Well, I mean, if you've been to Westeros and you know the lords, then you would know Tyrion's face, whether he has a beard and a shawl or not.
Mm.
So it was dangerous for him to go into the streets of Valyria, which, by the way, we're commenting, how beautiful of a shot was that?
That shot up from the river over Nain down into the slums or wherever it was. That was gorgeous.
I love how much money they spend.
Right? The first episode I ever saw of Game of Thrones, one of my first comments out loud was, what was their budget for this? This is incredible.
It's like a 145-hour movie.
It's wild.
I love it.
But we head to the whorehouse in Volantis here, and we meet the Mother of Dragons.
Halloween costume, anyone?
Yeah, I'll wear it. Halloween costume. I've been doing my squats. I'm good to go. Let's do this. But Jorah is there.
And that was shocking.
Drinking his sorrows away.
Yes, and Sarah mentioned it last week. She thought they were heading to Volantis to pick up Jorah, and while not quite that way,
Jorah picked up.
Good job, Sarah.
Yeah. So Jorah says he's taking her to the queen. What queen is he talking about?
Daenerys.
Now, that's what I thought. You know, I thought that immediately, too. And while I still think that's true.
Could be that red
if he takes
woman.
If he takes Tyrion back to Cersei,
oh.
he will be no longer in exile. She will let him back to his home.
Oh, crap.
Yes.
But he's such a loyal man. And I feel like, what do you think he's doing when he's sitting
is
there drinking?
Is he loyal man or... Is he loyal to Daenerys because he loves her?
Yeah
and there's no stronger loyalty.
You mean to her specifically?
Loyal to her and her cause.
Okay, because I thought you just meant as a person he is loyal.
There's no stronger loyalty than love.
Yes.
And so I think he's going to Daenerys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but let me ask you guys something. I haven't read the books, by the way, but based on the episode, if he means, and I didn't think about this, Kyle, if he means Cersei as the queen... Let's say he delivers Tyrion to Cersei, and now Daenerys has somebody in King's Landing that she doesn't know about, so when they get to King's Landing, she's got an ace in the pocket. He's just playing undercover, not commanded.
You think he's still like he's a spy of Daenerys now?
I think he's trying to make himself useful to Daenerys in any way, and even if she doesn't want him, if he's there, she will probably use him again. That's probably his logic.
Oh,
that's very good. Insight, Stephen. Yeah. Get out here.
What you doing? Have some.
Come join us in our orange pink with us.
That's very interesting. I haven't seen a scene in the show that would lead me to think that she has forgiven him. But I think you're saying like when she gets there and sees him, maybe she could use him. And I possibly.
It's
we
his
don't know.
Hope. It's not say, her. It's his hope.
It's his hope.
Yeah. Regardless of whether or not that's true, I think you bring up an excellent point where his logic. Might be this is a way I can get back into her good graces, or if not her good graces, at least make myself useful to her.
Well, Eric Reed makes a good point. Jorah would only—he only knows one queen, Daenerys. He would only refer to the queen.
That's a great point.
That's very true.
So that's a good
agreed.
Point.
And but for a second, did you guys feel like he may push him?
Yeah.
I was so for a second when he had the rope. I'm like, is he making a news? I swear to God, if he dies in this episode, I'm going to be mourning for 3 months.
Well, I was like, Jorah, who are you? Okay, this makes sense. Now you're helping.
How ironic would that be if him and his father both died while using the restroom?
I thought he was going to, for a split second, I thought he was going to put the noose over his neck and then push him. Mm-hmm. And I just felt all of the anguish just boiling up in me. The minute he dies, I will change my outfit into all black. It'll be the worst day of my life, or at least in the Game of Thrones world. It'd be terrible.
No, he's still going to go make more women. I really like that quote. Who needs more who needs wealth when you can make a woman laugh?
I wrote that one down. I wrote that one too.
I wrote that down in my book. That's my personal use.
Nice. Just
daily reminder.
Everything that he said in that episode, I think I made a joke saying, like, this is probably the sexiest scene of the season to me so far, because he's just so intellectual and so... he's so clever and so...
And heartbroken still.
Yeah, nice. It was just, oh, God.
It was because
he
beautiful.
Was attractive to the skeptic. I think that's when you liked him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he couldn't take her to bed because I feel the Shay guilt kicked
right.
in.
Yeah.
Can I say just slightly on the same topic of Valantis, I just love the language of Valerian. How beautiful is it? Just a quick side note, I just want to say that the linguist David Peterson created the language for the show, and if you want to learn some Valerian, go check out makinggameofthrones.com.
Do you know any Valerian?
No.
Je ne sais pas.
I'm sure that's French. So we only have 5 minutes left in the show.
So let's kick into predictions, guys. Let's do this. Go. Let's roll it. Where's that prediction stuff?
And we're going to go ahead and ask.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
Well, it looks like we have Sons of the Harpy War next episode.
We saw a lot of that. Ooh. We saw a lot of Sons of the Harpy.
Yeah, the battle going on in Marine for all that and everything. But Dorne! I saw Dorne! Let's go with Dorne! And the Sand Snakes. Oh, I can't wait to see that. Whoa, they're going to be so good. What do you guys think? What do you think's going on down there? It looked like from the preview that Ilaria was sort of getting a group together.
Yeah, and she said you can either... Basically, it's my way or the highway, or not the highway, but it's either peace or war, and if you're with me, it's war. Sir, or do nothing, it's war. What exactly was it that she said? I don't want to get it wrong, but all I know, that what I remember distinctly is she said, if you're with me, you're for war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I feel like that's going to get some supporters at this moment in time.
I think there's a lot of people in Dorne who want to see some action.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was said the last time we were in Dorne, and she says people are angry, people want to see a war.
Mm-hmm.
But the way is not to torture little girls. So
I'm not saying I'm agreeing with it.
Instead of torturing a little girl, let's go kill full-grown men to get some vengeance. Much better.
Perfect.
I don't know what's going to happen with Ilaria versus Cersei, but I'm just excited that we have so many women in this episode identifying who they're going after.
Yes.
And now that just makes us all excited because we're going to be along the ride for each of those, like, revenge sprees.
Yeah.
Bring on the blood.
It's exciting to see strong women not playing victims on TV.
Absolutely.
It's it's pretty exciting.
So a lot of that in GOT.
Yeah, absolutely.
RR's a feminist.
Anything else, guys?
Well, I'm just looking forward to Jaime Lannister and Sir Bronn.
Sir Bronn of the Blackwater.
Sir Bronn of the Blackwater. I'm really looking forward to their little adventure.
I feel like Bronn's going to die.
Whoa, right. There we go. Yeah, and that's the prediction.
That's my prediction.
So thank you guys so much for watching this episode recap of High Sparrow. If you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure to subscribe and rate. If you're watching us on YouTube, make sure to subscribe and keep on watching, guys. Thank you so much. My name's Kyle Maddock. You can find me at Mad Canard pretty much anywhere online.
I'm Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, and you can follow me at Cinematic Escape.
I'm Ryan Malady. You can find me at Ryan Malady. Ballad O'Harris.
So you do. I am Autumn Chiklis, and you can find me at Autumn Chiklis on Twitter and Instagram.
In all the realms.
In all of the realms, you can find me.
Cheers, guys. Vela O'Harris.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.